Welcome to Off the Shelf, Festival of Words, brought to you by the University of Sheffield. In this episode, part of our Ideas Alive series, Dr. Henriette Lauwers uses the Netherlands as an example of a nation striving and struggling to find new ways to discuss its colonial past and its legacy of slavery.
For the first time since the pandemic began, the entire world came together. Sport returned to centre stage. Billions of people around the globe were united by emotion, sharing moments of joy and inspiration. This gives us hope. This gives us faith in the future.
I love sport. I love watching sport. I like competition, and I like extraordinary achievements. I also like sport as a presentation of loyalty, the symbols and metaphors that go with it, flags, anthems, but also players making religious gestures or throwing love hearts at the audience. Great sporting moments are photographed, recorded, and remembered. The Olympics is the best of the lot because there is so much national performance and ceremony involved. Who does not remember the opening show of the London Olympics, where the NHS and multicultural Britain took centre stage? With James Bond and the Queen, of course.
I declare the Games of the 32nd Olympiad closed.
The closing ceremony of the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo created a significant symbolic moment. To flank the closing speech of the IOC president, there were six Olympians to represent the five continents and the refugee Olympic team. The only white person on stage was the speaker, Thomas Bach, the IOC president. The athlete representing Europe was my compatriot Sifan Hassan, who won two gold medals in the 5,000 and 10,000 metres and bronze in the 1,500 metres. Hassan is Dutch, born in Ethiopia. She arrived in the Netherlands at the age of 15 and became a Dutch citizen in 2013. My name is Henriette Lauwers. I'm a senior lecturer in the School of Languages and Cultures. I'm an immigrant. I was born and bred in the Netherlands. At Sheffield, my research focuses on post-colonial and multicultural literature and art. In this podcast, I would like to talk about the story of the nation, the tension between established stories and new facts and representations. This is the story of the narrative of the Netherlands, a highly urbanized, multicultural nation with a colonial history and a strong identification with World War II. Does that sound familiar? And yes, it's also about Britain. Sifan Hassan is remarkable first and foremost as a sports person, but also as somebody who uses her stage to create telling symbolic moments. For example, after winning the 5,000 metres, Hassan was handed a huge Dutch flag. She waves it, and then she drapes it round her, not around her shoulders, but over her head. Her whole body and hair are covered. You only see her face, a black face sticking out of a Dutch flag. Her message is clear. I am Dutch, I am black, I'm a Muslim woman, and I just won an Olympic gold medal. She shares her achievement with and for the Dutch nation through the national flag in which she has wrapped herself. But at the same time, she signals, I am black and Muslim too. She knows she has written herself into the history books, and she uses it to nudge that history into a new way of thinking about Dutchness. The Netherlands today is, like Britain, a multicultural and multi-ethnic society. Nearly a quarter of the people living in the Netherlands have a migration background, and in the bigger cities that rises to over 50%. Dutch multiculturalism is a fact, But the more relevant question here is, how does the nation perceive, imagine, and present itself? What stories are told and taught? Which figures are celebrated? Which episodes are forgotten? How is nation and nationhood performed? It looks so straightforward when you see people dressed in orange, a national colour that refers to the House of Orange, the ancestry of the father of the fatherland, William of Orange. But there are, of course, many sides to the way a nation imagines and performs itself. Some elements are quite concrete. The history of the nation taught in schools, national celebrations, customs or ceremonies, for example. It is also less concrete. It is also about what is not talked about, what is forgotten, who is forgotten, and about who gets to decide on what is performed, imagined or portrayed, those networks that uphold tribal hierarchies, as Bernardine Evaristo calls them. The nation's history isn't a fixed story either. There are changes over time. Some events and characters disappear from the history books and new stories are uncovered and brought into the spotlight. But let me start with a pretty stable symbolic moment on the Dutch national calendar. Each year, on the 4th of May, at 8 o'clock in the evening, the nation commemorates the victims of World War II with a two-minute silence. This is the expression of the nation's moment of mourning. It takes place in Amsterdam. The king and queen lay the first wreath at the National War Memorial. This solemn commemoration on the 4th is followed by a day of national celebration on the 5th of May, Liberation Day. Freedom is celebrated with concerts and street parties, much like was the case in 1945. World War II is important for the Dutch national sense of self. The Nazi occupation looms large as a defining moment in Dutch national identity, as a moment of profound human injustice. We were victims at the hands of our cruel neighbour. Professor Gloria Wecker puts it sharply in her 2016 book, White Innocence. The dominant self-image of the Dutch is that of innocent victims of German occupation during World War II. Recently, there has been a call for a second National Day of Remembrance, the 1st of July, also known as Kitty Kotti, the chain is broken. On this day, the abolition of slavery in the former Dutch colony of Suriname and the Dutch Caribbean islands is commemorated and freedom is celebrated. The Netherlands was one of the last European nations to abolish slavery in 1863. The call for Kitty Kotti to become a National Day of Remembrance is clearly a significant intervention in the story of the nation. Kitty Kotti is not a moment of innocence and moral righteousness for the Dutch nation. On the contrary, it is a reminder of the atrocities that took place under the nation's rule. It means that the Dutch can't only identify with the role of victim, but that the nation must equally, publicly, face up to their historical role of perpetrator, oppressor. Perhaps unsurprisingly, a recent opinion poll of July 2021 indicated that 59% of the Dutch population did not think a second National Day of Remembrance was necessary. The Netherlands already has a national monument of slavery, and there are many local initiatives and celebrations on the 1st of July. Making it bigger, taking it to national level, could lead to division and polarisation, according to many respondents. Still, on the 1st of July of this year, the City Council of Amsterdam took a significant step.
De provincie Holland.
The province of Holland was a big player in the trade and exploitation of enslaved people. In the 18th century, 40% of the economic growth was the direct result of slavery. And in Amsterdam, nearly everybody was making money from the colony of Suriname.
The City Council of Amsterdam, through the words of Mayor Femke Halsema, acknowledged the extensive involvement of the city in the slave trade, and she offered an apology. "It is time to engrave the great injustice of colonial slavery into our city's identity. Because we want to be a council for whom the past is painful and its legacy a burden. A council for all Amsterdammers." It is worth noting that Liverpool was the first city in Britain to apologise for its involvement in slavery and the slave trade. This was in 1999. The City Council made an unreserved apology for its involvement in the slave trade and the continual effects of slavery on Liverpool's black community. All apologies offer recognition of guilt, recognition of suffering, but there is a significant difference. Mayor Halsema makes it clear that she recognises that the history of enslavement is forever part of, woven into the fabric of, the identity of the city. We are who we are because of our involvement with slavery. It affects the story of the city in a profound, ontological way, not just black and brown Amsterdammers, all of us. That is an important shift that we've seen over the past few years. In Britain too, the recognition that colonialism, slave trade, plantation exploitation, is not black history that can be compartmentalised, but Dutch history and British history. It's an integral part of the history of the nation that requires investigation and recognition. This investigation takes different forms, but it's springing up everywhere. In the Netherlands, Utrecht, Rotterdam, Haarlem, a nearly self-respecting city, province, museum, university, charity is looking into their connection with colonial exploitation. There's a broad push to know, to uncover, and then to inform. Let me give you a few examples of such projects. First, the Mapping Slavery Project. The project looks at who profited from the slave trade, where the money went, what did people do with their money, which houses or statues, museum collections or family tombs were built with slavery money. The findings are recorded on digital maps, so just by clicking, you can look up how slavery profits changed a particular city or region. This mapping exercise literally brings history home. In my town, in my city, this house, this monument, was built with money made through exploitation. The legacy of colonialism penetrates our everyday life. There it is! You walk past it on your way to the supermarket. With the uncovering of the scale and the impact of colonialism on our everyday lives comes another inevitable movement. History, colonial history, cannot be kept at bay. It's becoming less and less a national story of conquest and uprising, of maps turning pink. History becomes a personal story, an uncovered first-hand account or a reconstructed biography, or an encounter between people shaped by the colonial history of their forebears. These stories express the complexity of colonial societies and often discuss how history still shapes present-day societies and relationships.
En ook die heerlijke zolder werd tot kantoor. Alleen de bomen dromen hoog boven het verkeer.
This is how the curators of the 2020 exhibition On the Canals of Suriname describe it. The exhibition took place in the Museum van Loon in Amsterdam. The museum is located in one of the Grand Canal houses. in the home of the von Loon family. Their wealth is inextricably linked with the Dutch East and West India Companies, and thus with slavery and exploitation. The exhibition revolved around the encounter of the descendants of enslaved people from the von Loon plantations and descendants of slave owners. The prospectus reads,
"On the canals of Suriname shows the shared history of Suriname and the Netherlands, marked by colonialism and slavery, through people, real people. Putting the personal stories next to each other, the concept of shared histories becomes tangible. It shows us where we come from, offers an insight into who we are today, makes it concrete."
This last sentence confirms what we noted earlier. It shows us where we come from and who we are today. The we is a collective we. We are all part of this history. We all need to know about it. This engagement with shared history requires a shift away from the history of opposition we know so well. Motherland, colonies, perpetrators and victims, enslaved and slave owners. It requires a rethinking and repositioning of our stories and the times also of our symbols, songs and customs. This is where the regional, the local, has a clear advantage over the national and its focus on national history. There is more room for manoeuvre, there's more room for encounter, there's less of a public arena. And there is a demand for a new story, because these private or community initiatives fill a void, a silence around the dark pages of national history. They fill that void, that silence, with stories, personal stories, lived stories, shared stories. The Dutch government, like the UK government, has not offered an official apology for the history of enslavement. Prime Minister Mark Rutte expressed his regret in 2020, and he admitted that there was a systemic discrimination in the Netherlands. A recent committee instituted by the Dutch Home Office published a research report on the state's involvement with colonialism and slavery, and their recommendation is clear: that the Dutch government offers an official apology on behalf of the nation. This apology is still forthcoming. But this does not stop the many initiatives to investigate and commemorate. Local initiatives such as fundraising for a memorial to commemorate the contribution of West Indian soldiers during World War II, Sheffield City Council investigating our city's involvement with slavery, and, very close to home, Sheffield University students of Dutch translating a graphic novel into English to allow for transnational connections. This is our history, warts and all. This is a far cry from Boris Johnson's recent comments during the Conservative Party conference in Manchester, where he claimed that rewriting our national history is dishonest and a betrayal.
"They really do want to rewrite our national story, and so we Conservatives will defend our history and cultural inheritance, not because we're proud of everything, but because trying to edit it now is as dishonest as a celebrity trying furtively to change his entry in Wikipedia. And it's a betrayal of our children's education."
But they, we, are already rewriting our national story, not furtively, but openly, in evidence-based teaching, conversations, commemorations, in schools, in cities, in universities, in country houses, and perhaps most visibly on football pitches, racetracks, tennis courts, athletic stadiums. Go, Sifon. Go, Emma. Go, Lewis. Go, Marcus. Go, Virgil. Go, Romelu. Go, Naomi. Go, Serena.
Thank you for listening. We'll be publishing content throughout the festival. For more information, visit www.offtheshelf.org.uk. Find us on Twitter at OTS Festival and at facebook.com/offtheshelf.